Today's episode is brought to you by Canby Foursquare Church. Since 1978, a place to grow, connect, and serve. In-person services are back with some restrictions to help ensure everyone stays safe and healthy. For the latest, visit their website at canbyfoursquare.com.
Welcome to Now Hear This, Canby,
your source for news.
The threat of a possible teacher strike was avoided this week.
There's a new irresistibly cute creature winning over fans, and its name is Scootaloo.
Sports?
It's like Lucy in the football. You want to kick a field goal, but they take it away from you.
We had to learn how to win.
Goal can't be in the last second of the game!
And interesting conversations.
Because I'm one of the strongest girls ever, and I know that for a fact.
I just really enjoy writing gossip as if I was a bear.
With an old maid daughter that make the best moonshine in the coast.
If it would have hit me in the face, I think I would have died. I really do.
I guarantee you would have died, man. Are you kidding me?
Welcome to the Now Hear This, Canby podcast. Thanks for listening. I'm Martina Baker, and this is what's happening this week in our community. Oregon state legislatures are preparing for the U.S. Supreme Court to overturn Roe v. Wade, which has guaranteed abortion rights nationwide for nearly 50 years. Last week, four members of Oregon's legislature, including the Democratic leaders of each chamber, met with White House cabinet members and other legislatures from Washington, California, Illinois, Maryland, Connecticut, and New York to discuss what they've done to protect abortion rights and what more is needed to ensure access. All of the states have either passed legislation to expand and protect access to abortions or are in the process of doing so. In 2017, Oregon became the first state to codify abortion rights into law and guarantee free coverage. In the February legislative session, lawmakers allocated $15 million to expand access to abortion care. That money was approved in anticipation of a U.S. Supreme Court ruling against Roe in a Mississippi case. A confirmed draft of an opinion in that case, written by conservative Justice Samuel Alito and leaked early this month by Politico, is clear in its intent. Roe was egregiously wrong from the start, it said. Politico said four other conservative justices, identified as Clarence Thomas, Neil Gorsuch, Brett Kavanaugh, and Amy Coney Barrett, supported that opinion, making a majority. An official ruling is expected in June. If the court overturns Roe, so-called trigger laws in about a dozen states, including Idaho, will go into effect banning abortions. States with abortion protections, including those that participated in the online White House meeting, expect to become a refuge for women seeking abortions. In the meeting, California legislatures discussed a package of 13 bills they're trying to pass. One proposal that cleared the California Assembly on Monday would protect California providers from out-of-state lawsuits. In Maryland, lawmakers are trying to expand training of abortion providers. Democratic legislatures and others worry that the Supreme Court could undermine those rights as well. Ann Doe, executive director of Planned Parenthood Advocates of Oregon, which will take part in the work group, said legalizing abortion rights does not guarantee access. This work group will engage community and providers to assess the gaps in access that need to be addressed and protections that need to be put in place for patients, providers, and assisters, given the onslaught of anti-abortion and anti-trans legislation being passed in states with legislatures that are hostile to our rights over our bodies and our futures, Doe said. The work group will work on proposals for the 2023 legislative session. They could be policy, administrative, or budget proposals to protect, strengthen, and expand equitable access to reproductive and gender-affirming care. Recommendations could cover LGBTQ children and adults. Canby Pickleballers, your wait is over. The grand opening of the city of Canby's brand new tournament-ready pickleball complex has been set for 4 p.m. Thursday, June 16th at Maple Street Park, which is located at 1400 North Maple Street. The event will feature speeches by city officials, the Parks and Recreation Advisory Board, and city staff. After the honorary ribbon cutting, a pickleball demonstration will take place and light refreshments will be served. The new complex features four pickleball courts, with each one being separated by 4-foot tall fencing. A black concrete border will support the green and blue asphalt courts. The courts will be lighted with motion-activated LED lights, and a gazebo will be installed to complement the new gazebo at the Maple Street Park splash pad. Concrete benches will separate the splash pad and pickleball courts. Jerry Nelzine, the city's public works director, said he was proud of the project. "It has been a fun and interesting process to participate in, and I'm happy to support the efforts of the Parks and Recreation Advisory Board," he said. "The board has worked tirelessly to improve Maple Street Park, and I think the pickleball courts are a great addition." The Maple Street pickleball courts were funded by park system development funds and through generous donations from Dr. Ashley McFerrin and Canby Eye Care, and Mark and Lori Schulholm and family. Come this summer, Kelly Rogers will join Canby School District as the next principal of Eccles Elementary School. "I am so excited to join the Canby School District and lead the wonderful Eccles Elementary and really become a part of the Canby community," Rogers said. The new hire replaces longtime principal Andy McKeon, who will be taken on the role of Human Resources Director for the district after the conclusion of the current school year. Superintendent Dr. Aaron Downs said he is excited to have Rogers come aboard. "We are extremely proud to welcome a transformational leader like Kelly to our district," Downs said. "His student-centered, positive, and inspiring leadership is evident, and we are thrilled for the Eccles community. Kelly is eager to meet kids, staff, and families in the coming weeks and over the summer months." Rogers currently serves as the assistant principal at Rosemont Ridge Middle School and was the instructional coordinator for Bolton Primary prior to that. He has also taught in the classroom at the elementary level, and he has a passion for elementary education. Rogers holds a bachelor's degree from Portland State and a master's and administrative license from Lewis and Clark College. District leaders said they were sensitive to the voice of the Eccles community in the process of hiring Rogers. "The Eccles Elementary School community had high hopes for their next principal," said Director of Communications Kristen Wolders. "They especially wanted someone with the ability to build relationships and someone who was a strong communicator. I think Kelly is going to be perfect for that role. He has such a kind presence and has a solid track record of building strong relationships in the school community. He considers himself to be a learner and a listener, and yet he is also an excellent leader and communicator." Rogers and his wife, Shiloh, have 4 boys. His family joined him at the school district when he received word that he'd been hired. He said he was touched and is very excited. The mission of the Canby Fire District is to save and protect lives wherever possible, and in the rich environs of the Willamette Valley that may sometimes extend to non-human life. Such was the case Tuesday morning when Cambie fire intern Leighton Imus, a volunteer firefighter and animal lover, was out mowing the lawn at the district's rural station on Highway 170 south of town. He noticed an owl in the roadway ditch, alive but apparently hurt. He saw that the owl was having trouble moving and may have had some leg injuries, Chief Jim Davis said. So he put on his turnouts and very carefully put it in a box. The gloves and extra protection were necessary, as wild adult raptors can be very dangerous, particularly if they are injured. But this one was perfectly calm in Imus's care, almost as if it sensed it needed help. Imus, who has served as an intern with Cambie Fire since his swearing-in last August, called the Audubon Society, which came to pick up the creature later that day. If you find an injured wild animal, the Audubon recommends that you wear gloves and protective clothing, contain the animal in a comfortable container lined with absorbent material like an old towel, and keep the animal calm and secure until a professional is able to respond. Do not handle the animal any more than necessary to contain it, for your protection as well as for the animal's well-being. Wild animals are terrified of humans and they may fight back, try to flee or freeze. Limiting contact will reduce stress on the animal. Cougar Country Hometown Sports Coverage is brought to you by Reif and Hunsaker PC. When you need an attorney, turn to the firm that Cambie has trusted for over 50 years. Call them today at 503-266-3456. For the latest sports news, follow us on Twitter at Cougar Country OR and Instagram at Cougar Country POD. Sometime between the rain-delayed 6A state finals tilt originally set for Saturday afternoon and the rescheduled match Tuesday evening, the clock struck midnight on number 14 Cambie's magical Cinderella run through the postseason. It was a Cougar team of mere mortals who took the field at Volcano Stadium in Kaiser this week to face the juggernaut of the fourth-seeded Westland Lions, a perennial powerhouse playing in its third championship game in 8 years. Cambie had not tasted a state finals match in several generations, not since the A2 championship on June 4th of 1960, and the experience chasm between the two squads showed from the first pitch. The Lions dominated the game from start to finish, clobbering Cambie to the tune of a 14-0 rout in just 4.5 innings of play, and triggering the mercy rule for the first time in a 6A final in 40 years. The last time a state championship game was shortened by the mercy rule, it was in 1982 when West Lynn won its last title 10-0 over Newburgh. The 14-run differential was the most for a 6A final in state history and the largest in any division since 2010. West Lynn piled up its runs over the course of three big innings, posting 5 in the first after several rare Cougar miscues on defense opened up easy opportunities. The Lions added 3 more in the third and 6 in the fourth to put the game out of reach, all of those runs coming with 2 outs on the board. West Lynn totaled 12 hits off Cambie pitchers, Joe Brock Miller and Jason Knopfsinger, the same duo that had proven deadly in shutting out 6th-ranked Mountainside on its home field 2 weeks ago. The atmosphere was electric, with thousands of Cambie faithful making the drive to pack the stands along the right field and behind the plate. Every pitch, every second. The crowds were there for it, especially at the start of the game. But in the bottom of the fourth, the outcome became obvious, and Cougar players, half of them seniors playing for the final time in a Cambie uniform, began hugging in the dugout, tears being quietly shed in preparation for a trophy ceremony that would not be theirs. As the Lions stormed the field after quickly closing out the Cougs in the top of the fifth to secure the largest win in 6A baseball history, Cambie players may have hung their heads a bit, but the crowd did not care. Head coach J.J. Stolzig, who just weeks ago had picked up his first playoff win as a coach, talked to the players after the game and refused to let them gloom, saying he would focus on and remember the many positives from his underdog team's remarkable and unexpected romp through the state's top baseball talent. "You brought a lot of hope to a lot of people," the 10-year Canby head coach told his team. "You united this community. You brought this community together. Did you see them out there tonight? That was because of you." Nearly all of the Cougar faithful remained to cheer on their team as they packed and headed for home. The Miracle Cougars that had defeated three straight higher-ranked opponents on the road in number 3 South Medford, number 6 Mountainside, and number 7 Clackamas. While the result was not what they wanted, the team had undoubtedly succeeded in bringing the entire city together and restoring Canby pride, much like the one 62 years prior, many of whose members remained to help build the foundations of what the community would become. When Bryce Oliver and Kellen Oakes picked up 2 hits for Canby in the 3rd inning, the crowd roared and rumbled as they pounded their seats. Though the inning proved fruitless, the brief moment of excitement from both the Cougar bench and stands served as a bright spot on the day. Oliver was named Canby's player of the game thanks to his efforts, with his and Oakes' hits the only ones of the day for the Cougs. Clayton Langdale was the other runner to reach base on the day, his in the 2nd inning thanks to an error. All 3 players were seniors, part of a strong class of 2022 athletes. Stolzig became visibly emotional, talking with reporters about his 11 seniors after the game, virtually all of whom also played football, basketball, and other sports in their Canby careers. "These guys, 11 seniors, they really care about each other, and that's what allowed us to go on this run, was love," he said, eyes wet and voice choked with emotion. "These guys have changed the trajectory of the program for their freshman year until now. There's been a lot of good moments with these guys, and they battled until the end." While the Cougs may be in the finals hunt again next season, it will not be the 6A title for which they will be competing. Tuesday was Canby's final contest in OSAA's highest classification for at least the next 4 years, as the school would be playing in the 5A Northwest Conference for most sports and activities next season. And it was perhaps fitting that a playoff run in which Canby repeatedly proved it can produce a squad capable of competing with the best 6A has to offer would end with a definitive statement of how thoroughly one school can be outmatched by another with 1.5 times its enrollment. While Canby may not be back for more next year, they have already left their mark. The plucky 14th seed that relied on a different skill every game to survive in advance. A group of seniors pushing for excellence against the very best in Oregon. 3 straight dramatic road wins. The biggest game for Canby spring sports in nearly 6 decades. We won't remember the score of the 2022 championship 20 years from now. We'll remember the team that gave us all someone to root for.
Hey, Tyler. Read any good books lately?
Yeah, actually, I'm reading a really good one right now.
Awesome. What's it about?
It's kind of complicated, but there's like these 2 kids with an absent parent, and then this mysterious stranger shows up with his sinister accomplices, and they just start wreaking havoc in their lives. I think it's like a Faustian metaphor.
Wow, that sounds really dense.
It is.
Interesting, though. Who wrote it?
You know, I think it's like a doctor, starts with like an S or something, Sass, Sos.
Tyler, are you reading The Cat in the Hat?
Yeah. I mean, I'm trying to. It's taken me like 2 months to get this far.
Okay. Well, hey, whatever your interest or reading level, open the world of all things books at the Book Nook in downtown Canby.
Yeah, guys, this local, independently owned and operated store is your one-stop shop for the latest releases and great deals on a huge variety of previously owned books, as well as games, art, and writing supplies and gifts.
They also do book clubs and game nights if you're looking for some fun, healthy activities right here in Canby. And hey, you know, for you, Tyler, they have a really expansive selection of children's books.
Oh, cool. Anyway, check them out on Facebook and Instagram, online at booknookcanby.com, or stop by 294 Northwest 2nd Avenue and let their friendly staff introduce you to your new favorite read.
Hey, Frankie, why do you think I'd be interested in children's books?
We'll talk about it later.
Oh, okay.
I'm Roz Mason, running for Oregon Senate District 26. I am committed to funding and supporting our police. I'm a licensed armed security officer in the state of Oregon and an active member of a police chaplain association. In the Mount Hood District, we know our communities require safety provided by the police. Law enforcement officers respond to many types of calls. Across the nation, police departments are adding cutting-edge programs that diversify 911 response, sending specially trained teams to mental health or addiction crises when needed. Security is an essential function of our government. Send me to Salem, and I will work to ensure our communities benefit from the most effective safety responses, which also keep our law enforcement officers safer. Paid for by Mason for Oregon, 21968.
On the Camby Conversation today, we are over at City Hall talking with the city's economic development and tourism coordinator, Tyler Neiser. Hey, Tyler, how are you?
Doing great. How are you?
Good. Doing great. We've just been chatting about Camby baseball and their amazing run. By the time folks are listening to this, we'll know if they won the championship or not. But now we're
crossing our fingers.
Yeah, we're still in this. I mean, it's amazing. Like, either way, they're either the first state champion in school history for baseball or the first state runner-up in 62 years. I mean, it's an amazing accomplishment no matter what, but we are pulling for them. But we're really here to talk about, obviously, the one of the city's signature events coming back this summer, the Independence Day celebration.
Yeah. Yep, Camby Independence Day celebration.
So what's the date on that? No, I'm kidding. July 4th. Yep. It's all back. We've got the parade. We've got the downtown village that gets set up with all the fun stuff and
all the vendors.
Yeah.
Street fair.
Yeah, the street fair.
Car show. All of it. All of it's coming back, and we'll have the beer garden and the stages set. So we're excited that we get to have this. Now, after a 2-year break, I think it was. Yeah, 2-year breaks. So.
Yeah. Awesome. So the car show, where's that going to be? That's always a fun element, and sometimes kind of snakes out into the surrounding neighborhood.
So it's right next to Knight Elementary School.
Okay.
It's off of 5th and near Grant Street.
Okay.
So it kind of makes a little T right in there. And
yeah.
You could go check it out. Some of those cars do participate in the parade as well, so you'll get to see them twice if you see the parade as well.
I know this is not necessarily the city, but maybe if some of the kind of third party stuff that have long been traditional, like the pancake breakfast and things like that, are those coming back this year as well?
So we're still working on the pancake breakfast, and I think we've got high hopes that will carry on.
Okay.
At Knight Elementary School or in the near vicinity of it.
Okay.
The kids.
Is that Rotary or Kiwanis?
In the past, that was the Historical Society.
Gotcha. Okay.
So the volunteers and stuff that was hard to come by, and so. But we're confident that we'll find somebody that is interested in doing that again this year, and we will also have the the kids area that we put on is off of 3rd Avenue, and that'll have the bouncy houses and all that good stuff. So
nice.
those will return.
Yeah.
So most everything will return. There will be a couple things that are a little different. I think the Boy Scouts used to put on an area in the grass area of Knights, and that certain troop is not doing anything at this moment.
Yeah.
So
they would do little activities for kids and obstacle course.
So
the Camby Independence Day Parade is one of my favorite things of just any time, any place. It's it's amazing.
Yeah. It's so awesome. There's so many people that come out and support it. And there's actually quite a bit of, like, the community that comes and participates in it. So it's it's an all-around, like, great thing that I love. Like, even,
it's
like,
timeless.
This will be my first year putting it on and everything like that. But being part of the community, it was always one of my favorite things to go and see. So.
Yeah. It's just, like, if you were trying to describe, like, the quintessential, you know, American parade, you could just show them pictures of this. Like, it's just, it's not too big. It's just, it's not, like, overblown. It's just a perfect community thing.
Totally.
When does it start?
10 a.m.
Okay. Before it gets too hot, right? Isn't that why we do it?
Yeah. And they get started, if you're part of the parade, show up around, like, 9 or, you know, get registered in and get set up.
The route is normal to what people will remember? Or
It's going to be a little bit different. It came on... First Avenue prior, and it's going to stay along Second Avenue until Grant Street.
Okay.
So it blocked that one. Is that Elm? The last intersection that goes on to 990? Elm Street.
Yeah.
So it used to block into there, and now it's not going to. So.
Okay, gotcha. there's a website, right, and where folks can go to maybe see maps or get this information?
CanbyIndependenceDay.com.
Okay.
We'll get you there and get you all the information if you want to register or be part of that event.
Yeah.
Or if you just want to, you know, come out and enjoy it for yourself.
Yeah.
You
get is your first time kind of organizing this, right?
Yes.
How's it feel?
It's felt really great, honestly. You know, a lot of people...
feel like, are you kidding me? I have to do what? No.
No. I mean, there's so many people that have been involved over the years that it's like they're so excited
second
to
nature.
Get involved and
yeah.
exactly it's second nature
and it's coming back and people are psyched.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So they're happy to get involved and make it go on. So it's really a community effort to make this happen and I'm really excited about it.
Are you feeling like and are you maybe already even seeing evidence that this is gonna be just huge, like the biggest we've ever seen?
Well, I mean, just from what we've seen with events, I feel like it's just going to be, people are so excited for this to come and the people that are already involved in it, I just think it's going to, I think it's going to be huge. So.
Yeah. Have you started having people register?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Lots of people register. And that's even like prior to what we've seen in the past. So usually it's a little bit closer to the event for stuff like that.
Yeah.
And we're seeing a lot more people, you know, sign up and stuff. So
is there a max to how many people can be in the parade?
No.
How many do you expect? Like what's a normal, like 40, 50?
I think around that
is
pretty normal.
For like groups?
Yeah. So.
Yeah. Will we have some riders on horses? Will we have the band, things like that?
Yeah. Totally. All that. Some of the normal people that are part of it are, you know, planning to return and all that good stuff. So.
Yeah. Candy.
Yes, Candy. Candy will be back.
I love, like, that's one of the best things is, like, someone will just, you know, throw, and it's like swarms of pigeons, like, you know, like throwing bread in the park and they're just, like, pounce on it. But yeah, hold on to your kids, make sure they're safe, because when they get that blood in their scent, they just lose all reason. We have a stage set up. We're going to have some entertainment?
Yes.
Okay.
So the beer garden stage will be off of 2nd Avenue, just past in between Grant and Holly.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other stage will be connected to the gazebo in the Way Park.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. What's the, I don't know if we have a lineup yet or what's it probably going to be, just music, some local bands maybe?
It's some local bands that we've had. Some of them are from the past and then some are new, and so we're excited to get to announce those here pretty soon, and they'll be playing a wide range of you know, classic music and stuff like that you know, all generations can enjoy. So.
yeah this is tradition. I know, like, Light of the Night's really big, but this is usually the city's biggest, right, in terms of attendance for city-sponsored events?
Yeah, I believe,
like,
it's
over 10,000 last time in 2019.
Exactly.
Yeah. What do you think is that draw?
I mean, like I said, I really enjoyed coming to it even, like, before being part of the event. And I just think there's just something about it that, you know, people want to get out and go with their families and come out and, you know, celebrate with the community. And I think that's what this is all about. And it really offers that to the community. So.
Yeah. 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 It's really cool, even in this day and age, to be able to come out to an event for free.
Yeah.
And yes. Just see your neighbors and have a good time.
Yeah.
This is the fire district thing, I know, but we've got the fireworks coming back as well. Later that night, we'll have our traditional fireworks show over at Baker Prairie.
Yep.
We've got an article on our website about that for folks that if you want to check that out. Anything else to tell people about Independence Day celebration and Canby?
I think we pretty much covered it. I mean, it's just a great event for people of all ages to come out and enjoy, the kids, mm-hmm. the parents and grandparents. And so put on your calendar and come on out.
Yeah.
See us at the 4th of July.
Yeah. And you guys are really hoping that this year will be, with it coming back, will be the biggest and best that you've done.
Totally. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, Tyler, thanks so much. We're really excited to have this event back and can't wait to go. Anything else to talk about with the city? We've probably got some other events coming up later in the year. Obviously, you're all focused on this right now.
Right. But, the Canby's Big Night Out Street Dance is coming up.
Right.
August 26th.
Yeah.
So we're planning that one along with this Independence Day celebration. So stay tuned for more information from that one. We're excited to have that one return. Yeah. That one actually was able to come back last year. So we're excited to
It's just this is the first year, you know, maybe some things started to come back later in the year, but this is the first year where we've got kind of a really normal, you know, we had graduation as sort of the summer kickoff, and that was almost completely normal. You know, that was really, really wonderful. And this summer, we've got the Renaissance Fair we had this weekend. Things are back, baby.
I know. It's awesome.
All right. Thanks, Tyler.
Yeah, thank you.
Hey, Tyler. We have a furry new friend I wanted to show you. His name is Frankie with an I-E. Isn't that cute?
Oh, I get it, because you're Frankie with a C-K-E.
Yeah.
That's so clever.
I know.
The only cute thing I see on this video is me, because you're blurry and frozen.
What? No way. I just got a new phone, and it's supposed to have a great camera.
Dude, you can have the best camera in the world, but you still freeze up if your video calls don't have quality internet.
So what should I do? Frankie's playing in the pool, and it's absolutely adorable.
I'm guessing you're using your mobile data for this FaceTime call, right? Just connect to your home Wi-Fi instead. I bet your video comes through just fine. You did just upgrade to Direct Link with Wi-Fi and fast upload speed, so you might as well get the best use out of them.
Oh, yeah, I did. Okay, hang on. There. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I should be on my Wi-Fi now.
Yep.
Can you see Frankie in the pool?
Oh, he looks like he's having a blast. See what fast upload speeds can do? For upload and downloads at the speed of visit www.directlink.coop/internet or give him a call at 503-266-8111.
Frankie, give me back my phone.
Hey, I'm AJ. I'm your local Oddmos franchise owner.
I'm Mike, co-founder of Oddmos.
And we're the hosts of The Odd Pod, a podcast about
life in the pizza industry. We're going to have on some franchisees. We're going to have some different vendors on. We're going to get a snapshot of what goes on behind the scenes in the pizza world.
Don't forget to tell them about the sports.
They're sports.
And the crazy wacky pizza that we have every Wednesday that we create. And we also have a special guest every week as well.
And I'm Gage, Odd Pod's senior sports analyst.
Gage, who gave you that title?
Me.
Oh boy. Find us on Spotify and Apple Music and the Podbean.
Canby Then is brought to you by The Book Nook, Canby's amazing local bookstore and gift shop. It is your source for new and used books, comic books, audiobooks, vintage books, well, all things books. You get the idea. They're across from the Backstop Bar and Grill in downtown Canby. And of course, as always, please support our unique and locally owned businesses as much as you can during this difficult time, especially businesses like The Book Nook. Well, when Governor Kate Brown ordered statewide school closures last month, it was not the first time in Canby history that schools were closed to fight the effects of a global pandemic. It was actually the second. It also happened in October 1918 as the world was reeling from the impacts of history's deadliest epidemic, a strain of H1N1 more commonly known as the Spanish flu. Schools were closed on Wednesday morning, October 23, 1918, by the order of Canby Mayor W.H. Baer, who was acting on instructions from the state health officer, Robert E. Holt. Holt was, in turn, taking his cue from the Surgeon General of the United States, who had, quote, directed that all public meetings as well as schools and theaters be closed forthwith to combat the worldwide epidemic of Spanish influenza, which is what the Canby Herald recorded. The schools, and particularly the toilets, maybe they ran out of toilet paper too, were to be thoroughly cleaned with formaldehyde and chloride of lime and fumigated. Where the disease originated was unknown, but because newspapers in Spain had been the first to cover it, it was dubbed the Spanish influenza, or Spanish flu for short. The first wave of the 1918 pandemic occurred in the early spring and was generally mild. The sick, who experienced such typical flu symptoms as chills, fever, and fatigue, usually recovered after several days, and the number of reported deaths was low. However, a second and highly contagious wave of the influenza appeared with a vengeance in the fall of that same year. Victims died within hours or days of developing symptoms, their skin turning blue and their lungs filling with fluid that caused them to suffocate. From the start of the year 1918 to the end, the average life expectancy in America plummeted by a dozen years. The symptoms started with a fever like the common cold. Unlike measles or smallpox, there were no outward signs of the infection. As the sickness intensified, so did the pain. Patients would cough blood and start to turn blue from a lack of oxygen. A lethal type of pneumonia set in and caused an uncontrollable hemorrhaging that filled the lungs, leaving victims to drown in their own blood. Young victims and the elderly were vulnerable, but what was baffling about this new strand of the flu virus was how it struck otherwise healthy young men and women in the prime of their lives. These were the same boys the nation was sending to Europe to fight in World War I, and as such, the disease spread quickly among troops who were housed in barracks and traveled in close quarters. The first cases of the disease in Canby were reported the same week that the schools were shuttered. Two sons of a local man named William Earle were taken ill, their ages unknown. These first two were soon followed by a large number of new cases that appeared across the city and Clackamas County and quickly spread. Though it's not known if he was the first, one early flu victim in Canby was a young man, Herbert Johnson, who died at the Vancouver Barracks Hospital in Washington, where the area's first cases and from the second wave of the pandemic were treated. Johnson, whose age was not listed in the obituary in the Oregonian, died on November 7, 1918, barely 3 weeks after he had left home to enlist in the military service. He left behind two brothers, Ernest and Al Johnson. His remains were returned home, where internment will probably be at Canby, the obituary read. There was another recorded death that happened in Canby even earlier in the pandemic. It was also caused by the flu, albeit in a very different way. Ernest Perkins, 31, of West Lynn, was killed after being struck by a southbound train on the Southern Pacific tracks in Canby one early morning in October 1918. He was on his way to Salem to attend the funeral of a friend, John Bush, who had died from the influenza. At the point where the accident occurred, the road parallels the track for some distance, turning sharply at the crossing, the Oregonian reported. It is believed that Mr. Perkins was wholly unaware of the train coming behind him. The world, it could also be said, was wholly unaware of the train coming behind it. The Spanish flu infected a third of the world's population and killed at least 50 million people worldwide, 675,000 of them in the U.S. It was one of the deadliest events in human history. For a long, brutal fall and winter, the nation suffered. Then, on the morning of March 13, 1919, some good news finally came. The America had returned to port in New York City. The ship with the famed 13th Aero Squadron attached to it had left on December 4, 1917, bound for the battlefields of Europe. Its troops had been engaged in the Meuse-Argonne Offensive and the Battle of Saint-Mihiel, and helped see the Allied powers through to a victorious end. "We worked behind the lines, but near the front most of the time," said the squad's color sergeant, Stuart McCrae of Salem. Many of the squad's members were from Oregon. "But there's an excitement even at that. At night we used to hide in shell holes and dugouts, and there were many nights that Fritz came out and bombed us." Fritz, of course, was a World War I era nickname for German soldiers. The Arrow's mission was to engage and clear enemy aircraft from the skies and provide escort and reconnaissance and bombardment squadrons over enemy territory. It also attacked enemy observation balloons, performed close air support and tactical bombing attacks, and even provided mechanical support and rescue in the heat of battle. "When a plane is brought down in no man's land or gets out of order there, we are the boys who go out to fix it," said Arthur Savage of Grants Pass. "And let me tell you, Fitz can snipe and shoot some." The squad was highly decorated for its service. Following the November 11th armistice of 1918, it was ordered back to the United States to be demobilized. The America's journey home, however, did not go as planned. In cramped and poorly ventilated conditions, an outbreak of the deadly flu took hold. The virus infected 105 men, at least four of whom died. The heroic work of Army surgeons, including Lieutenant W.A. Neal from Portland, saved countless lives and eventually brought the outbreak under control. The America docked and its soldiers were transferred to Camp Mills in New Jersey for sanitation quarantine. On board was a boy from Canby and two from Morgan City. They had survived the mustard gas of the Argonne and the horrors of the Spanish flu. And they were going home.
Tyler, did you know that the Australian lyrebird can mimic any sound that it hears, even chainsaws?
No, that's super interesting.
Did you know that a baby puffin is called a puffling? Or no. That baby sea otters can't swim, so their moms wrap them up in pieces of kelp until they learn how to paddle?
Wait, do you know any trivia that isn't like animal related?
Not really, but here's some stuff you may not know about the Wild Hare Saloon, where Canby goes to eat and have fun.
Okay.
The Wild Hare is one of Canby's longest running locally owned restaurants. Owners Joan and Darren Moden have been in business for 16 years.
That's cool.
Yep. Heck, you were just a baby back then. And they love to give back. They've been members of the Canby Chamber for that long, and they donate over $20,000 to local sports, FFA programs, and civic organizations each year.
Wow, I'm legitimately like caught off. That's cool.
Yeah, they also support more than 30 jobs in the community through their award-winning staff, some of them as young as 18. Hey, that's older than you are.
Dude, I'm 10 months younger than you.
With the days getting longer and the weather getting warmer, the Canby Wild Hare's expansive outdoor patio is the place to be. Furry friends, welcome.
Well, that sounds great. I'm going to go check them out just off of Highway 99E next to the Space Age in Canby at 1656 Beaver Creek Road in Oregon City, or on their website at thewildhairsaloon.net.
Now Hear This Canby is produced by me, Tyler Clausen. Our content director and star reporter is Tyler Frankie. And of course, our show is edited by Cameron Clausen. We also feature the vocal talents of Joy Struby and James Walden. So a round of applause to them. The song that you're hearing right now is Canby by singer-songwriter Olivia Harms, used with her permission. To find more work from her, you can visit her website, olivia13.com.
Now Hear This Canby is dedicated to preserving independent local journalism and redefining local news with our fun, fresh, and energetic brand of storytelling. Our sincere thanks to our local sponsors who make this show possible. Please show your appreciation by supporting the small businesses who support us.
The production of Now Hear This Studios, Canby's locally owned, full-service audio, video, and media production company. Our mission is to produce the best content in the universe, and we'd love to help you do it. Find us online at nhtstudios.com.
I will take a motion to adjourn.
I just moved it.
I didn't even ask for it, though.